Okay, let's address the proverbial parsha elephant in the room. Why exactly did Yosef not tell his father he was alive years before he wound up telling him? He knew Yaakov was in immense pain. He knew his father was probably mourning him. So why not spare him that anguish? Why not send him a message or a messenger or a letter or a carrier pigeon? Or better yet, why didn't he just pick himself up and go and tell his poor father that he was alive? Let's ask another Parsha elephant in the room question. How could the brothers have been so remarkably evil to attempt to murder their own brother? I don't care what Yosef did to them. Who kills their own brother? These are the Shvatim that we're supposed to look up to. These are the embodiment of the Avos. These are the tribes that we admire. Brother murderers? They couldn't figure out a peaceful end to this problem? They couldn't put their differences aside for the sake of saving, I don't know, their own brother's life? There's obviously something we're missing. What is that thing? So Reb Shamshon Falhirsch gives the following breath of clarity. The brothers knew full well that they were not a mere family of 12. They knew they were not just some group that happens to be kind and caring, what we would call the nice family on the block. The brothers were well aware that they were to become the eventual leaders of a nation that would carry the torch of morality for the rest of the world. They were well aware that while the rest of the world was steeped in murder and immorality and inequality and lack of justice and thievery and lust and barbarism, they were well aware that they were to become the heads of a nation that would introduce the godly concept of spirituality to mankind. They were well aware of this sacred mission they were embarking on. And so when Yosef began demonstrating signs that he was leaning towards kingship, when he began claiming that he was to become king over the rest of them, when he began showing signs that he favored monarchism, the brothers viewed it as more than just an annoying little brother hoping to one day be a royal king. The brothers viewed Yosef's claims as a potential destroyer of the nation of spirituality they were tasked with cultivating. The brothers viewed monarchy in its ancient form as being diametrically opposed to the nation the brothers were hoping to start. Kingship, which shuns spiritual greatness of the individual and cares only about the leadership of the king, is in direct contrast with Judaism, which is entirely about the spiritual potential of the individual. The brothers knew that Judaism is unique in the sense that we are all part of a Mamleches Kayanim, the Gai Kaitosh, a holy and royal nation. We can all climb to be on the level of a Navi, a prophet, a scholar, a sage. There is no one individual whom greatness is reserved for. Only if each and every member of Klal Yisrael is allowed to tap into the Kedusha, the holiness in his neshama, in his soul, and unleash it, can the mission the brothers were hoping to fulfill, only then could it be fulfilled. Kingship shunned all of that. The brothers felt that if Yosef was promulgating kingship came to fruition, he is a threat to the future of the entire Jewish people. He is a threat to the spiritual growth of the entire nation. If he wants monarchism, he has got to go. And true, it was painful for them. True, it was a heart-wrenching decision, but it was a decision out of true love and steadfast commitment to the mission they were on. Yosef knew that if he sent word to Yaakov and the brothers that he was not only alive in Egypt, but was second in command to the mighty Paro, he would only be reinforcing the brothers' old fears. He knew that, granted, he would relieve Yaakov of the pain he was feeling for losing one son, but it would only cause him to lose another 10 sons. For if the brothers found out that Yosef was in fact a king in Egypt, essentially the leader of the whole world at the time, their suspicions and fears would have only been validated, and off they would have marched to start a new nation somewhere else. So Yosef decided to wait. He decided to wait until the perfect time to show the brothers they were making a mistake. To show the brothers that true, the 12 of them are set to become the flag bearers of our nation, and one that puts immense emphasis on the potential of the individual. But nevertheless, a king doesn't have to be contradictory to that. A leader, if acting correctly, can be a source of immense encouragement to the masses. He can breathe hope and life into the individual. He can serve as a role model for the common folk to reflect. True, a king can push down, but he can also rise up. A king done right can be the ultimate catalyst for the growth of the individual. Some religions have a leader who takes all responsibilities and power. Some religions have leaders who take no responsibilities. Judaism has a unique blend. Yes, we have leaders, and we have rabbis, and we have rebbes, we have mekubalim, we have kings, we have nevi'im, but their mission is not to bear the spiritual burden of the community. Rather, their mission is to ensure that each and every member of our community is forever climbing the holy ladder towards greatness, forever climbing that ladder towards spiritual heights, forever climbing the ladder that the 12 brothers erected for us. Here's a story. In the early years of the state of Israel, there was a moshav that was half observant and half unobservant. And when it came time to build a school, it was decided that there were simply not enough kids for two separate schools, and being that each side had drastically different outlooks on what Jewish education should look like, there was a great debate as to who should have the leadership of the school. So they came to a middle ground that one side would pick the principal and the other side would pick the teachers. And the religious side was not sure which one to pick. So like most major questions of those days, they went straight to the undisputed sage of the land, the Chazon Ish, and they asked him if it's better to have a religious principal with irreligious teachers or religious teachers and a non-religious principal. What he told them surprised them. He said, not only can the non-observant have the principal, they can have the teachers as well. The only thing the kids need is for you to line the walls of the school from top to bottom, every inch, with pictures of Gedolim, our nation's holiest sages. No space should be left empty. Merely looking at these great men, our leaders, should instill in them the awe and aura our great nation exudes. Each and every Jew alive right now is here because we were lifted up by the leaders of our generation. We are here because of the vision of the Ponovitcher Rav. We are here because of the loyalty of Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Herman. We are here because of the roar of the Munkacher Rebbe. We are here because of the flame of Rav Aaron Cutler. We are here because of the unwavering, unbreakable Torah godless of Rav Moshe Feinstein. We are here because of the cry of the Satmar Rebbe. We are here because of the unshakable iron backbone of the Briska Rav. We are here because of the unparalleled leadership of Rav Shach. We are here because of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Shlomo Feifeld and Rav Nayach Weinberg searched the entire world for neshamas and ignited them. We are here because Reb Schneer and Reb Elia and Reb Yeshua Ber and Reb Gifter and Reb Yaakov and Reb Huttner and Reb Shraga Feivel and Reb Palm and Reb Ruderman believed in us and davened for us and nurtured us and made us into us. Yosef taught us a profound lesson that our leaders are our inspiration to become better. They allow us to see ourselves. They allow us to grow ourselves. They gently prod us to be the best version of us. We look up to them to remind ourselves that in Judaism, the sky is the limit. Our job is to keep climbing the ladder.